Let's talk about the market. Stephen Esposito joins us, Executive Director and Wealth Advisor, Senior Portfolio Management Director at Morgan Stanley in Lake Forest. Hi, Stephen. Welcome back.
Oh, thank you.
So talk about the market right now. What are you seeing in the numbers this week?
Actually, the numbers are every day is so volatile. There's, the obsession with every number. Yesterday you had a different market than you have today. I think people will focus on, sadly, every move the market makes is based on the latest news release. I think they're doing themselves a disservice. The rotation in the market we talked about for weeks and months with you on the show has materialized. You're seeing the rotation from the stay-at-home stocks, whose valuations were, and many of them were absurdly high and historically out of whack, and then the rotation into those companies who actually have profits or are trading at low multiples, the book or sales or what have you. And actually, those are the companies will probably benefit the most from the reopening in terms of earnings gains on a percentage basis are being rotated into. And I think that will continue. And if you're not in that group, a day like today is an opportunity to get to deploy capital into that sector. But I think overall, it's going to be a very good year for the right sector of the market. And I think you're going to have a very good economy going through the rest of the year.
A day like today. You don't mean today specifically, but just right about now. These days, it's a good time to rotate, huh?
Well, I've been rotating, as you know, for over a year. Depending on, every time I saw a bargain, it was in 2020 was the best time to do it, and most of 2021. But now it's really seeing a massive move in many of these favored stocks, the story stocks, as they would call them. You're seeing 50, 80, 90% losses in some of those companies. You know, they're down. They're still, people think they're cheap from 150 down to 35, but they're not cheap if they're not making any money, no matter what price they're at. It's just they're less expensive. But at the same time, the companies who are going to benefit from the reopening, like we said, the automobiles, the retailers, things like that, which are having a bad day today, the banks having a bad day today, those companies will benefit the most, assuming the economy reopens and things simply get better, which I think they will.
So don't be afraid of some of those news stories. You say sometimes they do us a disservice. Rotate back into some of these more traditional areas. I see that December retail sales dropped. How do you parse that?
I think it's a combination. We know of the supply chain shortages. It's not a demand issue. Anybody will tell you that. The demand is there. That's why you're seeing price increases. People are willing to pay more. The demand is there. And those who can afford it will do it. But you've seen the situation in which the way the sales were actually the highest in over 2 years, the biggest increase. But between the supply shortages and what people aren't figuring in is a lot of gift cards were bought because of COVID. So people didn't go Macy's shopping. They went and bought gift cards. Those don't count into the sales till after they're redeemed.
Oh.
So if people were giving gift cards around Christmas, they're probably starting to get redeemed in January, but that's not showing up in the December retail sales. So that could be one situation. And more importantly, I wouldn't look out to this last Christmas season, this holiday season. I would look to next year. Where do you think we're going to be in terms of demand and supply chains a year from now? That's what investors do. It's not what traders do, but that's what a rational investor does in an irrational market.
Well, I think the supply chain issues will be better, but not resolved. And I don't think we're going to have something as disruptive as Omicron. That's a hope. I felt that after Delta, so we'll see what happens. But put it this way, I'm optimistic. You don't think I'm foolish for that, do you?
Oh, I think you're a very intelligent man.
Stephen Esposito continues in this conversation from Morgan Stanley in Lake Forest. And I know what they're thinking now. Stephen, they're thinking, oh, you said nice things to me before the break, so now you get to come on for another segment. That's not how this works, Stephen.
Okay, I'm in.
That was my error, but I was just sort of parroting the thing you said about retail sales. And just to pick up the conversation where we left it off, while it was off in the past month, you made an interesting point that the gift cards don't count until they're actually redeemed. And I was actually thinking about gift cards the other day because I also know a reasonable percentage of them never get redeemed and turn out to be gifts to the retailers. But those don't count. They probably won't make up a 1.9% dip, but still, that is probably not a small amount of money. I think a lot of folks gave gift cards this year.
I agree, because remember, there was no supply, number one. And not a lot of supply anyway. And number two, people didn't go out because of the variant. So that, I think you're right. I think the normal supply of gift cards was probably substantially greater purchase there than normal that could result in a surprise in February. But even so, the reaction in the market today is so overdone because this quick pulling the trigger, so to speak, to get in or get out, which has a lot to do with computerized trading, without question. It's not individuals. Creates opportunities. You can look at it as a negative or a positive. I view it as a positive to be able to deploy more capital that's been coming in or new clients who haven't been deployed yet. And that's what I'm going to be doing today.
How do those programs work, those computer programs? Do they pick individual stocks or sectors, and then when it gets below a certain level, they buy or sell? Is it something like that?
Yes, and all of the above. It's triggered by different situations, technical points. There's a big technical situation going on right now in the NASDAQ 100 and all those, again, story stocks. They're all breaking all kinds of key support levels technically. So you'll have not only just selling, but potential short selling by certain fund managers or hedge funds. Algorithmic trading will then just continue to push them lower. And then at some point, those stocks will actually overshoot the runway to the downside, much like they did to the upside. I'm just looking at the pure fundamentals. I feel more comfortable. The analogy I use is when the tide goes out, all the boats go down, but the ones without holes in them come back up when the tide comes back in. And that's how I'm looking at it, looking for the boats without holes in them, where things look good and they're just being cautious up in the floodwaters. And there's a lot of that opportunity right now.
I know you can't give me specific stocks by name, but you keep talking about these sectors. You mentioned automotive a little while ago and some of these things that have been underperforming of late, but we're going to keep buying cars and we're going to keep buying items you find at Target. Can you just talk about some sectors you like?
Without question, automobiles is one of my favorite sector because you're going to look at probably another. From I just actually watched Mario Gabelli, one of my favorite money managers out there, and he pointed out that there'll be over 5 million more cars purchased once we get the inventory. And you're not going to be getting those at 10,000 off list. It's going to be, they're going to get full list because one of the biggest components of the inflation right now is used cars prices are up over 31%. So that really skews the numbers. So when that comes back in fruition, the automobile and automobile suppliers should do very well. And when the consumer gets out and many go back to work, they're going to be buying clothes. They'll be shopping in general. And I think people just want to get out of the house and go back to some degree of normalcy, which I think will be spring. When those of us in the Midwest and the northern states can come out of our hibernation and take off our masks, hopefully, that will be fantastic. I think the attitude will be so positive, so people will be out spending money, and there's plenty of money out there. So all those factors combined, I think, represent a good situation. And the banks drop today, I think, is premature. The financials will do very well as interest rates, ironically, are up today while concerns over the economy are in the market. And if the market was really concerned about the economy, rates would not be up, they'd be down. So you got this constant conflict in the marketplace that confuses investors, and it should, because a lot of it's not rational behavior. It's irrational, and again, algorithmic trading.
Talk about inflation for just a second here.
Mm-hmm. I think inflation will be fine. I think a lot of it's, it depends on your time frame for transitory. It could be 2 months, could be 2 years. I think there's certain factors in there that are creating inflation, but it's not the 70s or the 80s. I lived through that in as a money manager in the 80s, and I remember us seeing 18% interest rates, and people thought they'd never go down ever again, and mortgage rates would never go below 12 or 9 or 8, and then you see 2% mortgage rates. So I think the sheer nature of global trade and technology will keep prices down. And one thing I've always said when it comes to this, I learned this as a young man, and studying the market when I was 15, if you can believe that. But and price fixes price. That's what's going to happen. And I think people will find something else. And I think the supply chains will catch up because there's money to be made there for the person who does it. And I think you'll see inflation moderate much more than people think by year end, which will give us another reason to be investing in the market.
Not to get political, but you don't seem to be too upset about inflation. That is such a big news story with huge political consequences for the president and Democrats generally. And I think we are all persuaded that inflation is runaway. And there are stories out there about prices increasing and people have to make decisions about groceries or gas and so on and so forth. And I don't know what the day-to-day reality is for people, but I know that the news is treating it as much more consequential than you make it sound right now.
Well, I do think it is right now. I remember I'm a long-term investor. I look at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years. I'm saying, where do I think inflation is going to be? Is it going to be the same 2 years from now? I don't believe so. But there are extraordinary factors I can't foresee that could potentially happen. But I think it will come back in line. I've lived this for almost 4 decades now. professionally, and I've seen everything you can imagine. Remember in 08, oil was 150 going to 500, and we saw negative 30 oil last year. Now we're back up to 83. So I've seen all these extremes, and I've learned from them, and I reckon I've seen that movie before. So I think the near term is horrible for those people who are not getting raises or unemployed. It's horrible. Inflation is eating away at everything they do, and that's bad. And it's obviously got to be fixed, and that Washington has some control over that. But, again, I do believe the supply chains are playing a major role. But I think it will eventually dissipate, which is good news down the road for everybody. And I think that's that will happen. And when it does, it'll be positive. But near term, you're correct. It's hurting those, and it's not right. We've got to catch up with the supply chains. We've got to get everything back in line, and we've got to do something about energy prices. Energy prices, oil is now trading over $83 a barrel. So that's not good either.
Yeah. Well, you talk to people who got a Social Security boost, but it's not as big as the inflation bite, and they feel like they're upside down right now. So hopefully, as patient as we have to be, it won't be too long. It's nice to talk to you, Stephen. We will visit again. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Stephen Esposito, still the executive director and wealth advisor over at Morgan Stanley in Lake Forest. You know that smoke barbecue restaurant, which is really good, celebrating an anniversary. They've got a special coming up, and we'll tell you about that as we continue to highlight various businesses throughout Chicagoland on the Wintrust Business Lunch, produced by Pete Zimmerman. That's in a few minutes. I'm John Williams. It's 12:36. Stephen Leahy, the tax attorney, joins us. You can visit chicagotaxteam.com. Stephen, I'm looking at a story that cautions people that maybe the IRS is going to begin to monitor your transactions that you use in your, say, small business. Maybe it's a hustle. Maybe it's how you as a small business owner do your business. But if people are paying you with an app like Venmo, the app will automatically tell the IRS after a certain point, say 200 transactions or $20,000 worth of business, hey, here's the income that this person received, and therefore you should tax them. There's a few versions of this story, depending on the platform that you're talking about. But what do you know about this, and how concerned should we be?
Well, John, what you just mentioned is first, I want to thank you so much for having me on, because I've been screaming from the rooftops about this, because I read all these stories that kind of mislead people, because they tell you, hey, there's not a new tax on Venmo. And as what you just stated was the law as it sat last year. The new law is that the reporting now starts at $600, no matter how many transactions there are. So this isn't really about a new tax. Taxes haven't changed. Since the 16th Amendment was ratified in 1913, all income from whatever source derived has been taxable. It's true then, it's true now. The difference here is that if you're using a Venmo or one of these cash apps, what the IRS refers to as a third-party network, then if you receive more than $600, this network must report it to the IRS. And so when you hear, hey, don't worry, it's just about commercial transactions, it's just about businesses, it's just about, while that's true that only that will be taxed, all of the reporting, no matter whether it's business-related or not, is going to be reported to the IRS. And it's going to be on the taxpayer's shoulders to prove that it wasn't a business transaction.
Well, all right, so suppose we go out to a fancy dinner and everybody gives me the money, and then I put it on my card and they Venmo me the money. I mean, there's all kinds of transactions that take place like that that aren't commerce per se. How does the app know, and how does the IRS know?
They don't. They'll only know when you get what they call a 1099-K. Okay, we all know what a 1099 is if you do miscellaneous, if you do some work for somebody without being an employee, or what they call non-employee compensation. You get a 1099 form, and that gets reported to the IRS. And then you are supposed to take that 1099 and report that income on your tax return. Now, the same thing will happen here with a 1099-K. These are called information reports. Oh. And the 1099-K will simply report to the IRS the money that went through that account. And now, if you did this with a dinner, or maybe my Aunt Sally sent me $3,000, or maybe I sold my guitar for $1,500, or whatever that is, I'm going to have to explain that to the IRS. Because if I don't, and this is where the problem is going to come in, because people keep hearing, well, it's not taxable. And so then they'll get a 1099-K about this time next year, and they'll ignore it because they'll say, hey, this isn't taxable, so I'm not going to even worry about this. But what will happen is they'll get what they call a correspondence audit, because the IRS has this 1099-K. And they'll say, hey, wait a minute, we got this 1099-K, but you didn't put it on your tax return. So explain to us why that is. And then you'll have to explain where that money went, what it was, and how do you account for it.
This from an agency that has 6 million outstanding returns from 2020
exactly.
alone. So how does this dialogue take place? I mean, you know, you make it sound like a friendly person's going to call up and we're going to have a conversation, and I'll say, no, it was my aunt. She gave me the money.
Mm-hmm.
It was a
mm-hmm.
But that's not, I mean, how do I justify my cake, my 1099-K?
That's a very good question. You're going to have receipts. You're going to have to keep records. You're going to have to explain it. Because remember what this is all about now. The whole purpose of this change, and you just mentioned that it used to be $20,000 and 200 transactions. That had to be reported. And that happened in 2011 in response to eBay users. So people were selling things on eBay.
Yeah,
they weren't reporting the income. And so the IRS said, wait a minute, we want that income. You got to pay taxes on that income. So that's why they changed the rule. But now when it goes down to $600, it doesn't matter how many transactions, it's going to capture many more people. And what happens is this 1099 gets sent to the IRS, and now it's all computer, right? So there's just a computer will look, here's a 1099 with your tax number on it, and they compare it to your tax return, and they say, well, you didn't put that 1099 on your tax return. And then they'll send you a correspondence, a letter, automatically generated by the IRS, and it will send you a letter. It says, this is what you said on your tax return. This is what we found. Tell us why. And then it'll be on you to explain it. Now, remember, what they're trying to do is eliminate the tax gap. And the tax gap is the difference between what the IRS collects, and they collected about $3.5 trillion last year, and what they think they should collect, and they think they should collect $4 trillion to $4.5 trillion. So they're trying to get money from people who aren't reporting that money. Well, the only way they can do that is to question everything that comes in. Otherwise, how will they know? They won't.
That's funny because I sold a guitar last year for $1 trillion, so that might solve this problem for everybody. But I mean, think about that, though. So in the scenario you cited, I sell my guitar for $1,500. Depending on my basis, I should pay taxes on the revenue I get from that, right?
Well, unless I bought the guitar for $2,000 and I'm losing money.
Yeah, right. So in that scenario, okay, but hold on. In that scenario, then you don't owe taxes. But say you bought it for $1,500 and sold it for $2,000, then mm-hmm. you do owe taxes on the difference, right?
You probably do owe. That would be a capital gain, though, and not an income tax. But yes, so there are, again, people, and again, they're trying to catch people who are cheating. I understand that. And nobody's for cheating. Everybody thinks, you know, you should pay your taxes as it comes due. And that's true. But to put the onus on all and everybody that uses this to explain where that money went, what that was, this is what the problem is. And this is where it's going to happen because people aren't going to respond to the IRS. And so they're going to be audited and then they're going to be assessed additional tax when they probably shouldn't be. And that's where the problem is going to arise.
I'm going to start using Bitcoin. Does that get tracked the same way?
Well, they just passed the rule. Part of that is passing the rule for Bitcoin and all of these other brokers. Yeah,
darn.
So you can't. So again, the whole purpose of this is not to stop people from getting around reporting. This is, remember, we heard about all of this bank statement reporting, and that's what was in the Build Back Better bill that didn't pass yet, but they're still trying to get that. The same thing is going to be happening there. So it's really about reporting, trying to track all the money, and having everybody explain where that money comes from. And it's to catch the people who are cheating. That's true.
Steve Leahy is a frequent voice on WGN Radio. You hear him sometimes on David Hochberg's Saturday show as well. ChicagoTaxTeam.com. ChicagoTaxTeam.com. Stephen, we have not had our last conversation about this, you and I. Thanks for giving us a heads up today.
Thank you, John.
It's 1244. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. More business news with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. A suburban Chicago startup focusing on alternative fuels has earned a $50 million investment from Microsoft's Climate Innovation Fund. Deerfield-based LanzaJet is developing sustainable jet fuel. The recipe combines ethanol with kerosene with the same performance of traditional jet fuel, but with 70% less carbon emissions. LanzaJet will use the funding to build out its first fuel plant in Georgia that's expected to begin production next year. The facility has the capacity to produce about 10 million gallons of jet fuel and diesel fuel annually. Startups in Chicago enjoyed a good year in 2021. Funding grew by $7 billion last year across 374 deals. That's according to data from PitchBook and the National Venture Capital Association. That's up from about $3 billion across 321 deals in 2020. The largest local deal of 2021 was VillageMD's $1 billion investment from Walgreens as the drugstore chain prepared to open hundreds of clinics at or adjacent to its retail locations across the country. Startup investing grew to $330 billion nationally last year. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Time for the business of food on WGN. This is Steve Alexander.
Yes, sir. A year ago, this guy was on Shark Tank, and he's going to be back on tonight.
Yeah. I am Nick Hamburger, the CEO and co-founder of Quavos.
And what is or are Quavos?
Quavos are the world's first ever high-protein, low-carb, healthy chips that are made from egg whites.
Man, it all kind of started by accident, didn't it?
Yeah. My co-founder, Zach Schreier, is type 1 diabetic and would always cook eggs as a low-carb snack and basically love the crispy kind of edges of an omelet that are kind of left in the pan. He was like, hey, if eggs can be crispy and thin and salty, like, why couldn't you make them into chips?
And only 4 years later, these buddies from New Trier and University of Chicago have a 32,000 square foot manufacturing facility on the south side, thanks in large part to the investment they got on Shark Tank a year ago.
The most nerve-wracking experience of my life, I would say, like so much adrenaline.
But they nailed it.
Well, we got offers from Kevin O'Leary, Mr. Wonderful, and also from Daniel Lubetsky, the founder of Kind Bar. And we ended up working with Daniel, just given his wealth of expertise and success in the food space.
And they're back on tonight for an update segment. And spoiler alert, their original investor is writing another huge check. Some lessons learned along the way? Yeah, be flexible is one.
I would say probably staying humble about the product, because it's hard to look at yourself in the mirror and say, hey, I need to go back into R&D again. So we've been constantly iterating based off what consumers tell us. Glad that we've been able to stay flexible and make those improvements.
And stay in your lane.
Something that's part of our philosophy has been to try to not be everything to everyone.
So where can you buy Quavos?
We just launched Mariano's and Woodman's last week. So Mariano's especially, if we could succeed there, could be a ticket into all of Kroger.
Quavos, just another reason they call it the incredible edible egg, right? From the farm to your belly, today is National Hot Pastrami Day, and tomorrow is National Bagel Day. Have a great weekend. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
Hey, Barry Sorkin, owner of Smoke Barbecue. Welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm good. Good. Thanks so much for having me on.
Thanks so much for being you. You've got an anniversary coming up, don't you?
We do. Actually, truth be told, our actual anniversary was right in the middle of the holidays, right around December 18th. So we kind of a crazy time to try to celebrate it. So we pushed it off until January. But yes, we are celebrating 15 years.
Talk to me about Smoke Barbecue. What do you do? What's the secret to your sauce?
Well, you know, we opened up, 15 years ago, and at the time there just wasn't a lot of barbecue, at least the styles of barbecue that I had grown to love in Chicago. And we wanted to try to bring, you know, some of that barbecue that we had had in Texas and Kansas City, North Carolina, Memphis. We wanted to bring all of our favorite styles kind of together into one place in Chicago and introduce Chicago to, you know, what I would call regional Southern barbecue.
How is that different than Kansas City or Chicago?
Well, you know, Chicago has a couple of different styles that have been around for a long time. You could get sort of like the South Side style, where you've got the St. Louis spare ribs or full untrimmed spare ribs that are, you know, generally cooked over a hot grill with kind of a, I would call it a sweet, tangy sauce. But they're not, don't typically have a lot of smoke in them. Whereas, you know, some of these other regions that I'm talking about, they're cooking entirely over natural hardwoods, over indirect heat for longer periods of time. So the meat sort of soaks up a lot more of that smoky flavor. And then, you know, different regions have different styles of sauce, but we kind of, rather than try to mimic any one of those regions, we just try to find our favorite elements and kind of bring them together.
Before this interview gets away from us, you guys are doing an anniversary sandwich for $15, I guess, for 15 years in the business. And yeah. I've got to order it in person or over the phone. It's a smoked prime rib sandwich, right?
That's correct. Yeah, it's, we're excited about it. It's a really good sandwich. I mean, just we've had a lot of fun developing it because we've eaten a lot of prime rib in the process. But it's a smoked prime rib sandwich served on a nice crusty French roll with some roasted shallots, a little bit of red wine reduction, and a nice tangy horseradish sauce.
You're killing me here. I mean, those are just those are four beautiful words in a row: smoked, right. Barbecue. Sandwich. I'm missing a word in there. Prime rib. No, smoked prime rib sandwich, for crying out loud.
Yeah. So, no, it's a good sandwich. I don't like to pat myself on the back, but this is a winner.
This isn't something you can do all the time?
Well, certainly not for $15. It's something we'll see how it goes. It's a little bit of a step outside of what we normally do. We've done smoked prime rib before for special occasions, but this is the first time we put it on a sandwich and sold it in the restaurant. So, you know, we'll see how it goes. We're not, I wouldn't rule anything out.
So you guys are at 3800 North Pulaski, that's Smoke Barbecue, but you're in the Revival Hall too, aren't you? Or is that, that's a different place, right?
Yeah, well, it's the same brand, the same basic menu, although the Revival location's got a little bit of a more limited menu. Yeah. But yeah, same brand, same operation, same much of the same food. Yeah, so we're in both locations.
How are you guys doing with the latest version of selling food in Chicago with the vaccine and all that?
You know, we've been pretty fortunate. It's certainly been a challenging couple of years. We've had to reinvent our operation multiple times to accommodate changing circumstances, changing eating habits, changing regulations. But we've been really fortunate. We've found ways to make our food available to people, and they have found ways to come and get it, and we are extremely grateful for that.
Yeah. Well, so happy anniversary to you and everybody else. That's a Smoke Barbecue on Pulaski. Nice to talk to you. Congratulations, and I want one of those sandwiches now.
Right. Well, you know where to find us. Thanks so much for having me on. We really appreciate it.